Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Full Tank Motorcycle Podcast. We're back this week with another Q&A type video. So we've had people submit questions about a recent launch I was out on through YouTube this time. So we've gone through and taken the most upvoted questions from that comment thread, and we'll answer them roughly in that order. Apologies to anyone who asked like a duplicate question. I've kind of condensed them. So the first mention of a certain question is the one I've gone for, but I appreciate everybody's input. It is quite a fun way to go at these launches and see what questions you guys have. So we'll get through as many as we can. The bike in question is the Yamaha Tracer 9 GT Plus. I was really excited to ride this one because it's very techy, lots of features, quite a few questions around that stuff. And as for when I normally do these Q&A podcasts, I do them on my own. This time we've got Tim on hand to be the question master.
Yeah, which just means that I'm having to, I wish we'd done it on Facebook, a little part of me does at least, because then I'd have their actual names.
I normally add a few Facebook questions in, to be honest, for the Full Tank Motorcycle Podcast private Facebook group. Do go and join if you want to get involved there. Normally I would post there, but I just completely forgot. So my bad. That'll be the ones we answer first.
No, that's fine. It's just, it's going to be exciting when I get to some of these names down here that people have chosen.
I did think that when I was going through the questions last night and preparing the list, I was like, Should I choose some of the easier names to pronounce? And then I thought, Well, it adds an element of peril to the episode and also a bit of a challenge for you. So we'll see how you get on almost as much as me, to be honest, with the questions. Anyway, let's dive in with the first question.
All right. First question is from Scooby Fermentation. Cool name. They say, windscreen always seems to be an issue with this kind of bike in reviews. Any updates?
So this, I mean, also what I will say about these Q&As is people get stuck right into the details straight away, which I like. And this is true. The Tracer 9 has sort of like a narrow windscreen, and it is a little bit flappy, let's say. When you pick up speed, it starts wobbling. And I think that has been an issue for a lot of people because it's positioned as a sports tourer. I wouldn't say it felt massively different. Maybe it's slightly taller or they've made some tweaks, but ultimately you've still got this kind of... So it's like the size of an A3 piece of paper, basically, in front of you. So it's not really like a Goldwing or a big Tourer that sort of cocoons you.
Right. When you say flappy, do you mean that it's kind of like it's thin and it catches the breeze and sort of waggles around a bit? Or
I think it just it bounces up and down a little bit when you're at sort of cruising speeds, which I don't actually know if that's a problem from a wind protection perspective. I don't know if that increases turbulence or anything. You just notice it a bit. But... It maybe is a little bit distracting because you're just looking over the top of it and it's kind of bubbling around a bit.
My dad rode mine on the weekend and he was saying that it was right in his sight line, basically. And I didn't understand. I've never had the problem. Yeah, my Africa twin. So he was saying that where it sits in terms of height is right in the middle of his vision. So it's getting in the way. And obviously, well, on mine, you can't alternate. But I understand that could be distracting if you're sort of between two screens. I've had that with visors and stuff as well on helmets. Yeah. When you pop it down, you're like, crap, like the edge of it's just on the edge of your vision.
Yes, exactly. So I think it is at least adjustable on the Tracer. But I don't know if this is a bike you should be looking at if you want something that's got that like proper big, super cocooned feeling. And you probably will still have to look for like an aftermarket touring screen. Has yours got an aftermarket screen?
Mine isn't standard. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit bigger, a little bit lankier, which is why it sits right in your eyes.
Is it good for you though?
It's fine for me.
It's shorter than you or taller.
Yeah, he's a short ass. Yeah. He said, what he'll say is that his torso is the same length as mine, but his legs are tiny, like Lord Farquaad. But either way, he's a short ass. And I had to push him up onto the bike. I actually literally had to push him off the side stand.
Oh. You were like a, don't like rich people have stable boy?
For ponies. I was a stable boy, yeah.
Did we talk about that in a recent episode, having a stable boy?
It doesn't ring a bell, but I like it. Maybe it's a dream.
It was when I was talking to Chad recently.
Okay.
He was out on a launch with you. We did a video on the main channel about the Street Fighter V4. I'm sure this same concept came up. It's maybe something Freudian. Why do I keep bringing that up? Anyway, let's move on to the next question.
Fire with
that. I think the summary is it's not like, I think it's still a little bit on the narrow side.
Right.
It's still roughly the same in my eyes anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Next question is from Real Dev Bro. And it's, what's the radar for? What is the radar for, Rob?
So this Tracer 9 GT Plus, in the Tracer 9 lineup, you've got the standard bike, you've got the Tracer 9 GT, and then you've got the Tracer 9 GT Plus now, which is new for this year. Mm. And one of the big updates and new features is a front-facing radar. So as you can imagine, much like the BMW Tourers, the Multistrada V4, the KTM 1290 Super Adventure, it allows them to implement adaptive or active cruise control. So the idea is that you set a top speed that you're willing to do, and anything beneath that, or so when you close in on traffic, if it's going slower than that, the bike will slow you down and just follow the cars in front until they speed back up to that point, and then it won't exceed the speed that you've set. So let's say you've set it to 70 and the car in front starts doing 75, it'll stay at 70, but it's just when the traffic slows down, it maintains a preset distance. And I think there's three or four distance settings, so you can choose how close you follow stuff.
Right, yeah, yeah.
That's what it's for.
That's quite cool.
The thing that's kind of interesting about this bike is that it ties into everything on this bike. So the radar and the active cruise control will firstly, if it detects a car in front, or a bike, works with bikes pretty well, as we tested out.
Yeah, you'd hope so. Yeah, I mean, that would be a problem, but it's obviously a smaller target for it to latch onto, I suppose.
It works totally fine, I think. So, it'll firstly cut the power, of course, and just rely on engine braking to try and bring you down to a speed that will maintain that distance from the vehicle in front. If that's not enough, and it's like, oh, we're getting a bit close, it'll give you some brakes, and it's got a linked braking system. So it'll distribute braking between the front and rear and bring the speed down that way. It won't slam on, but it'll, you know, give you sort of moderate braking levels.
Yeah.
And whilst it's doing that, mate, it's tied into the semi-active electronic suspension. So it'll give it a bit of firmness on the fork, so it won't pitch forward. So you're just steering, basically.
I've got to say, that does sound impressive.
It is pretty impressive. And the way it works is pretty impressive. I mean, a lot of the launch was like smashing it on mountain roads, twisties, where you couldn't really switch it on. But towards the end of the day, on the way back to the hotel, they did give us a stretch of sort of a roady motorway type thing. And we got to try it following bikes and cars and, you know, whatever was on the road. And I think that's the scenario in which you would be using it, just to get between places if you wanted to focus your attention on what's happening around you rather than feathering the throttle constantly and sort of that sort of thing. So it's certainly not a replacement for paying attention. That's not the intention. It's just an evolution of normal cruise control.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the thing with cruise control, because I love cruise control on a bike.
Me too.
It's not a deal breaker to have it on there, but it's a real nice added bonus if you do, obviously if you're doing distance and stuff. But the ever frustrating thing with it is that you have to keep jogging it up. So if you've got like one touch cruise control, that's irritating as hell because you've got to keep turning it off and on. If you've got the actual one where you can jog up the speed, that's better. But, you know, traffic's inconsistent, so you constantly have to play with it whilst you're even if you're in sort of steady moving traffic, you have to play with it. So if it took that away from you and you didn't have to keep touching brake and disconnecting it, I'd say that's very appealing for a touring bike. For a GT, fantastic.
I think it really depends on what you use your bike for. So if you use it for getting between places on the motorway and you're riding for work or commuting or those sorts of things, or maybe you've just always got a bit of a boring slog on the motorway to get to your favorite roads, then it's great. But if you're someone who just rides on a Sunday and just wants to go on twisty roads and maybe avoids motorways on their Calimoto app or whatever, you probably never use it, and so you may as well just buy the normal one and save yourself a few grand. But for me, I liked it. It's something I'd use, I think. So yes, that's what the radar is for.
All right. Well, the next one is similar to that. I believe it's still on radar. So it's Timothy Lopez. Cool name. That's my name, but cooler somehow.
Yeah, it is. I didn't want to say it.
Okay. So Timothy says, I'm assuming the radar is for adaptive cruise control. Yes. That being said, I would like to know what conditions must exist for the adaptive cruise control to turn off automatically. When it turns off, does it convert to regular cruise control or will the bike be fully manual at that time?
So, good question, because there are certain scenarios in which it will switch off. I think they've tried to encourage people to use it for motorway riding. So it will only activate in fourth gear and above and at 50 kilometers per hour and above. So if you want to use it for, I quite often use cruise control on my Tiger in like average speed checks. I don't know if you do that as well, Tim.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's say you've got like a 20 mile per hour average, you know, speed check in town. Quite often I'll just stick cruise on.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you're not kind of like on and off the throttle. Mm. So you can't really use it for that. And also it won't let you do regular cruise control. So there's, with the other bikes, I think like the Ducati Multistrada V4, you can choose between active or normal cruise control in the settings and sort of use the radar or not. Mm-hmm. With this bike, it's only got active cruise control and there's no option to switch to manual or just kind of, what would you call it? Like inactive, like done cruise control, isn't it?
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
So you stick it on a 50 kilometers per hour, fourth gear. But if the traffic in front of you slows down to 30 kilometers per hour or below, it will then start flashing at you and say it's going to deactivate and it just switches off and goes fully manual. So this is why you got to pay attention big time.
Of course, yeah.
And I think also there were certain scenarios where we're going like round tight turns. I don't know if it was because of the speed or because it lost whatever was in front.
Yeah.
But there are situations where it does just kind of switch off. I think the main one is when you're coming down to a stop, if the traffic in front of you stops, you've got to be ready for it to disable and take over the braking.
Yeah.
This is why it's not autonomous. It's not driverless.
No, of course. But it's not like you're in a, I mean, people I think get too familiar or comfortable in cars sometimes, especially when you see reports of like Teslas and things where people are just sort of like, the car's driving itself. It's not a self-driving car in the same way this isn't a self-driving bike. It's just there to enhance the cruise control, like you say.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. It's a slightly better version, but in the same way, if you're coming up to a junction and like you were using normal cruise control, you wouldn't just leave it on. You'd be like, oh, I'm probably going to have to stop here. So I'll turn it off, you know? If you crashed, you wouldn't be like, oh, it was the cruise control's fault. Like then they're not saying that it works, you know, in that way. And so you have to use it like normal cruise control.
Is it quite intuitive to work or to use rather? Did you find it very easy to understand and start using it?
Yeah, you just switch on it, because you don't have to choose between normal or active. You just switch it on and it just
works.
Those
are the best kinds of upgrades is when it's a really smooth transition. You get it instantly. You don't have to learn something new. Yeah.
The only thing beyond normal cruise control that you have to think about is the distance setting. But the smallest distance setting, like when you're used to riding quite close on bikes, is actually quite big. And so I had it set on the smallest one. And then you just literally switch cruise control on, hit set like you normally would. Mm. And it behaves the same. It just slows down if you're getting too close.
Sure.
It does do other stuff. Like apparently if you're on the brakes and it thinks you're going to hit something, it will also assist you by giving you a little bit more brake in as well. And what was the other thing? But the thing that I think you have to watch for, and it basically is the kind of like tighter turns. So if you're on a motorway or an A road where it's quite wide and open and you're just kind of belting along and you don't really, the corners are so gentle that you don't slow down, it works totally fine. And if you slow down a little bit, it kind of works fine as well. Mm-hmm. But I've got to say, I did try and use it on not tight twisties, but when we were following other bikes in a group on sort of moderate roads where you might slow down 10, 20 miles per hour and then sort of nail it back out the corner.
Yeah.
Now, the problem with doing that is that the gap between bikes, much in the same way that when you watch motorsport, they give you a time difference, don't they? Because at certain parts of the track, the bikes are going slower.
Yes.
And at certain parts, they're going faster. So if you measure it in time, it gives you a better representation of what the gap is. And naturally, you bunch up in the corners. But because the active cruise control is working on a distance, That means that instead of naturally bunching up in the corner and then stringing out on the exit, it slows down a lot. If someone in front of you slows down, you're already really slowing down way before the corner.
Yeah.
And then when they nail it out the corner, because it's the cruise control, it sort of picks up a lot more gently than if you were just giving it full throttle.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really work in those scenarios because the rider behind you, I had to switch it off because I thought the guy behind me is going to be like, what on earth is he doing?
Yeah, exactly.
Slowing down so much and then not speeding up coming out the corner. So that's the only thing that's maybe not intuitive, but that was me trying to use it in a scenario where they haven't really designed it for that. And it was more of me trying to find the limits of what it's good at and what it isn't. So I'd say, don't use it for that. Don't use it on twisties. Enjoy the road. You know, it's a brilliant bike, you know, CP3, inline triple, loads of power, great chassis, great brakes, great semi-active suspension, comfortable, all those great things. Loved it. Cool. So switch it off, enjoy. And then we go back on the motorway. Back on, mate.
Nice.
Job done.
All right. Next up, we have a question from Philip Piranha.
Mm-hmm.
That's a cool name too. I don't understand adaptive cruise control, but no blind spot monitoring.
Yeah. So it has a front facing radar, but no rear. Mm. Whereas something like the Tiger 1200, which we both sampled and enjoyed, has the rear, but not the forward facing for the active cruise control. So I think, well, Triumph's reason for doing that, they said they focus grouped their potential customer base for that bike. And they didn't want to add to the cost of the bike by putting a front-facing radar because nobody wanted it. But everybody wanted blind spot warnings. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've tried those. What do you think of those?
Yeah, I didn't think I would be impressed or wowed by them. But I said the same thing to you on the day. It was most noticeable when you step back off the bike and go on one of the bikes without it. And you go, oh,
yeah,
I missed the little blinker. Yeah, I actually quite liked it. It's, I mean, I don't know how much it adds to the cost of the bike. So that would be a bit of a trade-off if you go, like, do I really need it? But yeah, if it's there, it's a nice little added bonus. Very usable.
I think it's only available on the top tier Explorer models, but it's one of those things where 9 times out of 10, you know, it's no replacement for Lifesaver, you know, but that 1 or 2 times a day where you look and you're like, wait, the light's on, I'm going to look again. And you're like, oh shit, there is something there. Like, not that you necessarily would have hit it, but it's just this kind of like suggestion, isn't it? So, and I think the Triumph one's quite good because when you stick your indicator on, if there's something still there, I think it flashes to be like, look, like there's something there, come on. I don't know why they didn't do that, to be honest, though, on this Yamaha. They really have kind of sold this much more complicated implementation. Really, the blind spot warnings. Like, if you think about how the adaptive cruise has to tie into the rest of the bike, all those, you know, into the engine, the braking, the suspension. It doesn't have to do the suspension thing, but it does. Whereas the blind spot warning is literally a radar on the back and then some lights on the mirrors. And apart from the indicator thing that Triumph have done, there's no need to really tie it into the rest of the bike's electronics. So it does seem like a simple, quick win. I think the only bike that has both, though, is the Ducati Multistrada V4. I don't think the KTM has both. The Triumph doesn't have both. The BMWs, I don't believe, have both either. So I think, personally, it's a shame. I would like to see both. I think it is. It's a different thing, but it's very useful. And some of them also give you rear impact warnings as well. So you'll get double flashes or something if there's something coming behind you.
Right.
Which I just think is a weird feature. Like, what would you do if something was...
Well, what are you going to do? Just brace. I don't know. I want to know.
Rev bomb is your only chance, isn't it, really? Like, let's say the car would want to be stopping at a roundabout, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And the driver's looking to their right to look for the traffic, and they may not have seen you because you're a smaller physical mass than a car.
True.
And so then they're coming up behind you. I mean, basically, they're the ones who need the warning, not you.
Yeah. And they're the ones that can see you. So, like, the warning won't... Yeah, definitely.
I think you could possibly... nail it is your only option, but if there's something in front of you or you're about to join
just
the roundabout,
dump it and fly across the roundabout.
I don't know, it all sounds risky, but then again, you know, if you've got the tech, if you've got the radar and the lights, maybe it's better to have that than not, to know that you're going to get hit before it happens. I'd love to see some like use cases of that, like, you know, Ducati saying it's got this great new feature, but like, can they replicate that on the test track to show how you might be able to avoid that? I don't really know, mate. To be honest, that's why I often position myself off to the side in those scenarios.
I've got a habit of it, and even when I'm following a car as well, I often, you know, favour a side. So you've got an out if they brake or something too harshly. Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, it doesn't have both, and I'm also a little confused. Although, like with everything, it's all sort of development costs. I think the other thing that you have to realise is, like, when people talk about the cost of putting another feature on a bike, it's not just the hardware and software. Let's say. So, like, you know, a radar and some lights is probably a couple hundred quid tops. But it's also the testing and homologation that all these features have to go through in order to be safe for use on the road. And I believe, I've been told anyway, when I've asked similar questions to other manufacturers, that is like a really big part of the cost. And also, you've got limited development resource for each model. So you've got to choose where you deploy it. So it's probably something to do with that and keeping the cost of the bike to a certain point. Who's next?
Next up, we've got One Mod Safwan. Said it fast, so you can't even tell if I'm saying it wrong. So the question is, what I don't understand is why do manufacturers keep on adding tech that takes away from the enjoyment of riding? With new modern tech like this and plus connectivity and so on, in my opinion, is too much and take away take the focus away.
I mean, what do you think, mate? That's philosophical. That's not necessarily just this bike, you know?
I think you can apply that to a lot of different things in terms of like modern cars, equipment, phones, anything that sort of, you know, they add features that make your life easier. I would agree with one aspect of it, which is with new tech often also comes new updates, and updates are something that really do frustrate me because, you know, they're supposed to make your life easier. And you know, from computers and phones and things, when they start adding on an update every single time you boot the thing up, that really does get irritating. But when it comes to riding, and I've ridden, the Tiger is probably the most advanced bike I've ridden in terms of like additional tech on it. I've never noticed it take away from any of my enjoyment at all. I mean, if it's really, really good, you shouldn't even notice it's there. That's the point.
Until you want it. Yeah. So like, let's say it starts raining and you're like, where's the rain mode? And you switch it on, it's really good. Yeah. And you're like, but even then, to be honest, mate, most of the bikes I ride, I just stick them in sport or street or something like that. And then even if it starts raining, I don't really use the rain mode. I almost like the consistency of knowing how the throttle feels. And then I know, okay, it's raining. I need to turn it a little less. But if it, I think there's the kind of assumption with different modes, for example, that you will just ride the same. Like, let's say you're setting off on the lights and you give it like half a turn of throttle. Mm-hmm. If you do that in the dry, that's fine. And if you do that in the wet, but in sport mode, maybe it'll spin up. But if you put it in rain mode, you can still ride in the exact same way.
Yes.
Do you know what I'm saying? And it will accommodate for that. Whereas I ride differently to that. I ride, as I think most people do, sort of with a bit of caution in those conditions.
I warm up into it, I think. So I want to feel what the bike's doing, you know, to a certain degree. And it's only when my confidence sort of builds that I'll start pushing the envelope a little bit. I don't want to get on and just assume that rain mode and traction control is going to take care of me. I kind of want to feel it out a little bit. And same as what you're saying, really. I think it's more of a problem if you're going from a really techie bike that has a lot of things, a lot of rider aids. If you then got onto an older bike with none of that, then I think that would be more noticeable, and that's possibly a problem. But I've never really noticed it get in the way of my riding or my enjoyment of the bike when it's done properly. If it's like a really snatchy or, you know, inconsistent ride by wire, then yeah, obviously that's going to detract from your day. But if they've done it well and you don't even notice that it's working under the surface, then, you know, it's never a problem for me.
I think that was an interesting comparison with like phones that you made. But the thing with laptops and phones and, you know, smartwatches and all those things is that like the fundamental purpose of those is to make your life easier. And so more features just contributes to that. I don't think motorcycles are necessarily there to make your life easier. They're there to be engaging and fun. And so again, it comes down to what you ride for. If you ride a bike because it's the cheapest way to commute and you can cut through traffic, then more features like this might add to that easiness. But if you're somebody who rides purely for pleasure, then I agree, then perhaps less is more. And you've got basically a few options. If you never, ever want any tech, just buy a simple bike. They do exist.
Yeah. And they're going to keep existing as well. They're always going to have a flagship with everything on it. And then the simple one that's more affordable. Yeah.
Although probably I think we have to acknowledge that the simplest bikes in a lineup are still getting techier, I suppose. So it's fair enough their comment. But yeah, there generally is like a spec down version. Mm. Or buy a bike where you can switch it off. So with this Tracer 9, it's a great bike on regular roads. If you switch everything off, you know, you can minimize a lot of the settings. You can switch off TC, you can wheelie it, you can, you know, stick it in sport mode and choose what exact settings you want and, you know, leave it pretty manual. Quite often with semi-active suspension, you can set that to a manual setting as well and just have the convenience of adjusting it through the switch gear. Yeah. I think the other thing as well is like maybe just have, if you're someone who does a bit of both, is having a couple of bikes. And I say that as a, like, that's a very privileged position to be in. Yeah. But let's say you were thinking about, I don't know, everyone's budget's different. So I don't want to, like, you know, some people will spend 20, 30 grand on a bike. Mm-hmm. Some people spend a couple of grand on a used bike and they get good, cheap biking out of it. Maybe less. You can get bikes for 500 quid, you know. So I don't want to sound like too removed from how much money people have. But let's say you got 10 grand, for example. You could easily spend 10 grand on one brand new bike. Mm-hmm. Or you could get an 8 grand bike. Maybe it's like a year or two old. The same bike that you wanted with a few miles on it.
Yeah.
And then the remaining 2 grand, spend it on something very simple. And this is the kind of setup that I've kind of got at the moment. So I use the Tiger 800, which is not super techie, but it's got cruise control, heated grips, heated seats. It's got a few different riding modes, TFT dash. So it's reasonable.
Yeah.
And it's built for comfort and just getting around. It's got luggage. And that's what I ride if I've got to go up the motorway somewhere. And then I've got the SV650S, which is a couple of grand. It's a bit knackered, needs a bit of work. But what is, I rode it back from KTM yesterday. I just dropped off the 890 Adventure from reviewing that. There's no ABS, no TC, no riding modes. There's not even a fuel gauge. It's got a low fuel light, but it's very simple. It's got a rev counter, speed.
Sure.
And then that's it. It's super simple. And riding that back across the Cotswolds after doing the same trip on the 890 Adventure, which is quite techie, there's as much fun to be had. And the fact that it doesn't have ABS means you're really looking at, is there a damp patch or is there some gravel or same for the TC. It's not got a lot of power, but, and so that may be my recommended approach, but I know that that is not the financial situation that everyone's in. But I think there's something to be said for having something that's a bit raw and old school and knackered. It doesn't have to be knackered, but it's got a bit of charm to it.
Hopefully not, but
you remember when we rode the Norton Commando, you said it smelled a bit of petrol in a good way. I think that about my SV.
I was gonna say, does it? I bet it does. I've seen the exhaust on that thing.
Exactly, it does smell a bit petrol-y. I don't know to what point it's good for it to smell a bit like there's a threshold of how much petrol you can smell.
If it pops and bangs too much, then probably not great.
Wow, we spent a bit of time on that one. So let's move on.
All right. So Denise Devine, is the extra money for the Plus worth the upgrade besides the radar?
So the radar is the big one. The other thing is the screen. Have you seen the TFT display on the normal Tracer 9?
No, I have not.
Let me send it to you because you've got to see this. If anyone listening has already seen this, they will know what I'm about to deliver to Tim's inbox there.
Oh! Yeah, it's not a confident noise, is it? It's not happy. There was a whole experience there. I went through a rainbow of emotions. Shock, surprise, disgust.
So for anyone who, we got to remember that a lot of people don't watch this on YouTube. True. They're listening in. So it's like...
It looks like Batman's goggles. Yeah, it's glasses.
It's two TFT displays. And I think a lot of people have likened it to Squidward from SpongeBob SquarePants, which is actually pretty accurate. Or the old man from Up with his big square glasses.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's what I was... It is. There you go. Yeah. For anyone who doesn't... You don't even need the visuals. Just picture that. And then imagine like he's got like a heads-up display. With his speed, what's going on there? Oh, just regular stuff, like temperature and stuff,
Oh, trips. And cool. Yeah.
Nice. It's got eyebrows on it as well. Do you know what else it looks like? It looks like Johnny Five.
I was going to say, I think I should have said that to someone the other day. And they just looked at me blank. And I was like, surely people know. It does kind of look
assemble.
Like that.
Yeah, it's Johnny Five. 100%.
Yeah. Anyway, it's it is a little bit of an odd-looking dash, and it's something that probably hasn't been reviewed that well. So not only do you get the adaptive cruise radar on the Plus model, but they've also given it a big, normal, rectangular, traditional, if you, I was going to say traditional dash, Traditional TFT, let's say, it's just a normal slab shape. That opens up a few connectivity bits and bobs. I think there might be extra rider aids and stuff.
Cool.
I think the adaptive cruise is the big one. Those two things are the big ones for me. And there's different paint jobs and all that, like some minor differences. But really, if you hate the dash and you've got them on the other one and you've got the money to get this one, then perhaps that's worth it.
What are we talking in terms of difference in money? Sorry to cut in, but...
No, that's a fair question. And it is substantial. So let me just get it back up. I did include this in a video earlier, but I want to get the numbers exactly right. So the standard Tracer 9 is £11,010. Those 10 are important. They always price them like that, Yamaha. I think it's some kind of like calculation of sales tax, but the prices are never, you know, £12,999. They're always something in
just
£10.
Just knock off the tenner.
That's eating into their margin. So standard Tracer 9, £11,010.
Yeah.
The GT, which gets panniers, a bigger screen, and I think like a comfort seat and a few bits like that, is £13,110. So you've jumped up £2,000 and £2,100 for the luggage and some comfort features. There's probably some other stuff as well. And then the plus with the radar and the bigger TFT display as well, that's £14,910. So you're going from, it's £2,000 steps basically, 11 and then about 13 and then about 15. £4,000 is a big difference.
That is a big difference. I mean, that is probably a little steeper than I was expecting. Because radar, I know, is it's pricey. It's a pretty hefty amount of tech to add to it, especially considering that it controls, like you say, your braking and your suspension as well. Like, it's,
you've really got to look at this bike and think, do I just want a MT09 that's comfortable with a screen and an upright riding position? In which case, just get the regular Tracer 9 and save yourself a lot of money. But if you're looking for a touring bike, you can justify it for the GT. And if you're looking for touring bike with tech and you're someone who likes to use that stuff, then you go for the plus. But you've really got to be sure that you're going to use them. It's a bike that I'd probably recommend going in, well, really having to think about what sort of riding you do.
Yeah.
But also maybe demoing and seeing how that feels. Now, the 1290 Super Adventure S from KTM used to be the most affordable bike that came with adaptive cruise control, because when they launched it a year or two back, it was down at less than £15,000 and came with the radar as standard. Now it's up at £16,599. So, you know, price is always creep up at the moment, and manufacturers do tend to launch them a bit cheaper. So whereas the KTM used to be the most affordable bike with adaptive cruise, it's now the Tracer 9 GT Plus, I think. So you could look at it from the other perspective and be like, if you're someone who does a certain style of riding and actually that techie feature is the most important thing to you, then it does now represent the most affordable way to get that. And the rest of the bike's really good. So
of course,
maybe it's it depends how you look at it, basically. It's either expensive versus the Tracer 9, or it's quite the most affordable way to get that tech.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, it also shows what that adds to a price, if it is still the cheapest one, right? Mm-hmm. That it's still in line with it, and that, I guess radar just does cost like £4,000.
Basically,
bonus on, All right, next question is from Rafael Cordoba 13. He's the 13th in line in the Cordoba family. So he asks, quick shifter seems to be a new generation that you can change gear up with throttle closed and down with throttle open. Please confirm that. Also, that you can change gear and it won't cancel the cruise control.
I think that's right.
Did you try it? Did you test it?
I'm pretty sure I did. And I think that's right. I think that's right that you can change gear. But obviously, it only works in fourth and above. So you're kind of limited in some ways. But it does mean you can... I'd need to double check that. I'm not super confident, but I think that is the case. The quick shifter, though, they did talk about that in the presentation. So whereas it was good on full throttle and then, you know, upshifting or closed throttle and downshift, they now showed how they've... revise the software so that it also is able to do it when you're just slightly on the throttle, and you can go in different directions as well. I believe it's, let's say you're about to overtake a car and you've got like 10% throttle because you're just coming up to it. You're waiting for your space. And then sometimes you might want to shift down just to overtake. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
give you that power.
Yes.
To use the quick shifter previously, I think you would have had to shut the throttle to shift down and then go full throttle. But now you can just give it like 10% and shift down, even though the throttle's open, and then give it more throttle to then overtake.
I'm with you.
So yeah, I believe that is the case.
Yeah, like a quick quick downshift to overtake something. Yeah, makes sense.
But without having to shut the throttle. I mean, you could always use the clutch as well. Like that is the thing in that scenario. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But they do say it's a slightly better quick shifter. So I do believe that's the case. Mm-hmm. We'll move on to the next one. I might rapid fire through the rest of these.
Sure. This one is SP3. Thank you for your very simple name. Will you be able to review from a rider's perspective with a pillion?
On a launch, no. I think you're so limited for time. Sometimes people do, if it's the lunch break, go and take someone for a spin on the back and see if they find it comfy or not. But I had to film my review at the lunch break, so I didn't get a chance to take anyone on the back. However, if I get one in the UK, there's a little chance I might do a bit of tilt riding. You never know. Yeah. I'll come pick you up again, Tim.
Well, yeah, was that an offer to me? Yeah, I'll take it. That's fine. Next question is from O.N.E.L.Y. Yamaha usually builds to price / value. My question is, did this get built right? Is it crap, basically, is the question. I'm going to cut through the politeness in that one.
Yeah, I think the build is quite nice on these bikes. They've changed the switch gear. It used to be a bit plasticky, and well, they're all plasticky, but like the layout used to be a bit confusing. That dash as well probably detracted from how it feels in terms of being premium, but the cockpit feels nice. You got the comfort seat, so that feels nice, and then around the bike the finish does look pretty decent. And also it has quite nice paint on it as well. The Trace 9 GT Plus comes either in their racing blue with blue wheels, which is quite fancy, or you can get this gray with gold stripes and black panels on the top, which looks quite classy. So I think it is probably one of the more premium
finished. Yeah. Okay.
Yamahas. I think for the money, it looks decent, although it's still not, you know, like the most fancy pants bike. But for the money, I think it looks appropriately built.
Grumpy son of Bill, since it is for touring, is it shaft drive? That you could probably solve with a question. You could just look at the picture.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's more, this question is making a point that shaft-driven bikes are superior for touring. Look at the, you know, GS, Tiger 12. You know, it's based on their CP3 engine. And to then convert that engine to run a shaft is like so much R&D and cost just for this one specific bike. And they're all manufacturers work in this kind of efficient way where you repackage engines and chassis. What's the plural of chassis?
Chassis.
Oh, I just Googled it. The plural of chassis is chassis. No, it's just chassis.
Oh, just chassis.
It's like sheep. Oh, God, this should have been a quick question. You're right. He could have just Googled this one. But I think it'd be too much investment just to do it for this one bike. So no, it's a chain drive.
Fair. Carlo Maria Ricci. I gave it extra flourish.
You missed the Ricci.
I'm going to go, Ricci. Well,
yeah, two C's is Ricci.
Ricci. It's a cool name. I've given it some flourish because I like the question. The quintessential question remains the same. How well does it wheelie? Rob?
Cannot confirm or deny. But in sort of second, it's, you know, it's 120 horsepower or something. Yamaha always make their engines lively. You can put it in sport mode and you got that snap on the throttle. So absolutely, like there's enough there to get it to pop up. I witnessed a few as well. And then obviously it'll clutch up as well. There's bags of power there. I think with these bikes where there's a lot of weight on the back as well, if you've got the cases and stuff, they sort of, like my Tiger, when it's got all the luggage on, wheelies a lot easier than it.
I've been riding with the only time I've ever managed to get and accidentally get the front wheel off on the Honda is the same. When the top box is full, it's a really nice counterweight that it just sort of, lofts it. Next one is Solon, Ciolis. It's a
I love the accent. It's getting more adventurous.
Yeah, maybe even offensive. So I'm going to rein that in. Is the price worth it? Because it is getting really close to the KTM or Ducati.
So that's true. Like I say, the KTM 1290 Super Adventure S, for example, that's $16,599. So if $1,500 more and you could get that bike. Also gets the cruise control, but it's a way more bonkers bike. We're talking 120 horsepower, 889cc Yamaha versus the 1290 KTM that's got like 170 horsepower, is it, or something? It's really much more like a what would you call that? It's like a, it's a, you know, Super Adventure. I guess the clue's in the name. It's like a, yeah. a super tourer, like a super yeah. naked, but a tourer. Yeah. The Ducati as well. I think by the time you spec all of the cruise and all that kind of thing, adaptive cruise, it is more like 20 grand. Maybe the comparison is lower down in the Ducati range. Mm. But I think feature, if you want that tech, then it's going to be hard to find that elsewhere for the same price because Yamahas yeah. do offer good value.
Yeah.
But if you're not that bothered and you've just got a 15 grand budget, then yeah, I think there are lots of other good options to look at if you're sure. not bothered about getting all the latest features. So it depends where you're coming from.
Next one is S40 TKL. And the question is, a top contender to this bike for me is the Tiger 900 GT. While it is likely no different from last year's model, I'm curious how the ergos and wind protection compare. I don't really want an aggressive leg position.
Similar bikes in terms of stature. I'd say the wind protection is roughly equivalent as well. I found that the Tiger 900, the screen is maybe a little more narrow and small. You might have to fit like an accessory touring screen to be equivalent to the Tracer 9 GT. But yeah, I don't think there's a huge difference. They're sort of pretty similar in size, and for me actually the biggest difference between those two bikes is that the T-plane crank in the Tiger 900 is quite vibey at motorway speed, whereas the Tracer is going to be smoother. That would be the big differentiator for me. You might either like that because it sounds nice and it feels good in the low revs on the Tiger, or you might hate it because like you want something smooth for touring, in which case the Tracer is a better bet. And also there's a big power difference. Like I think it's 95 on the Tiger 900 and 120 on the Tracer. So those would be the big bind difference. I think the riding positions, unless you're very sensitive to the sort of small differences there, and well, maybe you're super tall and you're going to find one more comfortable than the other.
Sure.
Really, I'd be focusing on that engine character and performance difference, let's say.
Yeah. So similar in terms of your comfort on the bike. But yeah, I've got to say, I kind of wish I'd done the 900, the Tiger 900 long distance, because I didn't notice obviously the vibey stuff because I was just doing lower sort of speeds. But I am curious because I did like that T-plane crank.
Yeah,
it gives it a bit of extra.
It depends, something. I think, if you are happy riding at 70 or if you like to push a bit. At 70, it's not too bad. If you go up to 80, it starts to get a little bit irritating. Mm-hmm. And if you like to ride quicker than that, then yeah, it does vibe quite a lot.
Sure.
Not that I would. I stick to 70, mate, just for the record.
Yeah, I've been with you on a day, I know. If 70, 50 miles an hour most of the time. So next one is from Rob Morph. That's your name, but cooler. question is, a selling point of the Tracer was its low price. The extra money for the GT Plus now puts it on par with the Multistrada V2S. How do they compare?
Similar. Again, I would say, well, the thing is, you're not going to get the adaptive cruise on the Multistrada. So you've got to make that call. But then again, I would say the big difference that, you know, that I think that bike, the V2S, gets the semi-active suspension. It's got normal cruise. It's got a TFT display. Similar in size. You can get luggage for it. Again, it's just, do you want a V-twin or a triple? Really, for me, and the looks, maybe it might sway somebody more towards the Multi V2S. Although I wouldn't say it's a beautiful bike. It's not the best looking Ducati for me. Let's try the V2S. Let me refresh my memory. It's all right. It's nice enough looking. Probably a bit better looking than the Yamaha, to be fair. But yeah, I'd say it's going to feel reasonably similar in stature. What's going to make a big difference to riding all the time everywhere is that V-twin versus triple. And I'm a big triple fan, so that might sway me towards that. But for others, the V2 will do the job, and it has a bit more grunt and growl and talkiness and that sort of thing.
Next person is simply named Sean. Were they the first person to get Sean on YouTube?
I hope so.
Because that's impressive.
That's not how it works, is it, YouTube? You can just pick anything.
Can you? Oh, yeah, you can. No, it's not like your PlayStation name or anything.
Sorry, mate.
Anyway, Sean says, how does this compare to the Techie Multistrada V4S in terms of 1, radar cruise control, and 2, semi-active suspension, and 3, braking effectiveness?
Radar cruise control behaves pretty much in the same way. I think if we did exhaustive testing of how they work, maybe there's some different scenarios where you could catch it out or whatever.
Does this one, the adaptive cruise control, for example, on the Ducati, you might not know, but does it have the same where it, you know, also applies the brakes and you know, stiffens suspension. And stuff.
I think it does. And actually, you know, the suspension is going to stiffen when it, if you got the dive control.
It would do anyway, yeah, I suppose.
Yeah, it would stiffen anyway. So that's kind of actually thinking about that. It's maybe a bit of bollocks, isn't it, from Yamaha? Because it, just it should do that anyway.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
If it's got
yeah.
anti-dive.
Yeah.
look, I think there might be, I think there's two modes of the suspension on the Tracer, whereas I believe you can actually get in there on the Multistrada V4 and sort of play with the individual damping settings. So I think there's more customization on the Ducati. I think the brakes are probably a bit better. I haven't ridden them back to back, but probably a bit better on the Multistrada. You get big Brembos on that. And they're generally sort of set up to be quite sporty. The Tracer has good brakes, but they're sort of Yamaha own brand Advix made. Yeah, I don't think, again, I think these are, you know, the Radar Cruise Control behaves roughly similarly. There's more customization on the suspension for the Multistrada, but again, the Yamaha does its job. Brakes are fine on the Yamaha. Quite good on, you know, most of the riding we were doing, good brakes on the Multistrada. But the big question here is, like, do you want a 170 horsepower adventure bike or a 120 horsepower tourer? And are you willing to pay the extra $5,000-$7,000 to get that Multistrada with the cruise control? Because you have to add the sort of touring package to get it.
Oh, right. Okay.
And again, like, I know I keep saying this on all these questions, but these aren't the key differences to me. Mm-hmm. The key difference will be the power and the price on that bike.
Sure. Yeah. And obviously the engine character is going to be different, isn't it? Because it's a very different, different configuration. Cool. Next one, or last one, in fact, is from Christopher Robinson. And it is, still don't know whether to take the Tracer 9 GT or a 2020 S1000 XR.
S1000 XR actually is probably more comparable, right? Because it's an inline four, so it's got that smoothness, which I think is very nice on the motorway if you're touring and stuff. Mm-hmm. But also, I think S1000 XR is like super punchy, isn't it, in terms of power?
It's, yeah, it's pretty impressive.
Ooh, 166, I believe, for that year model. Mm-hmm. So another nearly 50 horsepower. Punchy. Mm-hmm. I do believe there was some sort of vibey issues on the S1000 XR at a certain point, a certain speed, like a lot of vibes come in apparently. I don't know if they fixed it with that particular generation. So that's something I'd research. Mm-hmm. But yeah, again, it depends if you want a really fast bike or just like a modest bike. And also the BMW doesn't get some of the tech features like the cruise control. So do you want cruise control? Yes or no?
Yeah.
And do you want to just cruise on the motorway, in which case 120 horsepower is enough and you've got that extra tech to make it a more comfortable experience?
I think just to cut in, he was saying GT rather than GT Plus. So he was considering without the cruise control.
Then 13 grand. Yeah, okay, so you can probably get a used S1000 XR. I don't know. I'd have to demo both and then make your own mind up. But I'd say one's a bit more banzai than the other, isn't it? 120 versus 100, nearly 170 horsepower.
Yeah, I would say so.
It's a lot. It's a big difference. Tracer's fast, but it's not like...
We would always say this with any of the bikes, right? If we're reviewing it, it's just our opinion. And our opinion, our, you know, our riding style might not meet yours. So you have to go and ride it. You have to go and find somewhere that you can go and demo that and test it.
Basically, you watch reviews on YouTube to get more information. So when you show up and demo a bike, you know what you're looking for. But so individual, how you feel, how you fit the bike physically, that's the most important thing. So I think that's a good place at which to round off and say, use this as fuel for your motorcycle purchasing journey, but also get on a bike and make your own mind up. Anyway, I think that's pretty much it, Tim. Many thanks for being the question master. I think
no
you stumbled through those usernames with varying levels of success.
Yeah.
But not bad.
Yeah, it was exciting all the same.
Many thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.